Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. I am your host, Neil Horwitz. You can get more info on the podcast at dsmsports.net. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter at njh287. Thank you so much for listening or downloading. We have a really, really good show for you guys this evening. Going to be talking to Blake Lawrence, CEO and founder of Open Doors. Really changing the way that the brands and pro athletes are connecting, specifically for social media sponsorship campaigns. So really great conversation about Open Doors and what Blake's been doing with that company and the growth they've been enjoying recently. But first, we have this episode's helpful tool. And this episode's helpful tool is something that I get asked about quite a bit, and it's what do I use to edit my podcasts? I don't have any expensive software. Final Cut Pro is awesome. I know how to use it, but I can't afford it myself. iMovie, I do not have an Apple product. Windows Movie Maker, blah. I use a free audio program called Audacity. Audacity. It's pretty much everything you need if you want to start producing your own podcast, or even better for interviews. If you're doing interviews for your team or organization, it's a great way to work with the audio. You can adjust the levels, you can add transitions, you can add in other sound effects, you can add sound beds, you can amplify things and adjust levels appropriately. Really, just everything you could possibly need to do with an audio file, you can do for free with this program called Audacity. It's an easy download to your computer, and then you record, you go from there, and you're good to go. You can record directly into the program or import MP3 files, and between an iPhone and Audacity and a computer, you can be a pro in no time. So check it out, audacity.com, download Audacity, and start producing some interviews or podcasts or anything under the sun, and let me know how it works for you. Hope you enjoy it. All right, that's this episode's helpful tool. We'll be right back to talk with Blake Lawrence, founder and CEO of Open Doors. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool. Now we're set to have a great conversation. Really psyched to learn a lot about this guy and his company. We are delighted to have Blake Lawrence on the podcast. He's the founder and CEO of Open Doors. You probably have seen the name all over the internet, all over social media. And welcome to the podcast tonight, Blake.
Neil, thanks for having me on, man. Excited to share a story and tell the audience what we're doing in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Can't wait to learn more. You guys are really innovating in a space that is ripe for innovation and really growing and changing every day. Before we get into the meat of the discussion, though, we always like to get to know all of our guests. I mean, you're living the dream. You're doing a lot of really cool stuff. So tell us a little about your career path. I mean, I was coming up playing football, getting experience while you were in school, and then how you got to where you are today.
Well, I think I love what I get to do every day working with pro athletes and social media and sports and marketing. And I think it just goes all the way back to my roots. I think I was born with a football in my hand. My brother and I played football all growing up. He's just a year older than me. Tyler Lawrence, he played quarterback at Kansas. You know, I had a tough decision coming out of high school in Kansas City, whether I'd go play with my brother at Kansas or go to a real football school. And, he might listen to this and like that, but, you know, fell in love with the University of Nebraska, and came to Lincoln in 2007, started playing as a true freshman with Bill Callahan in 2007. And now the world, I think, was flipped upside down. You know, my brother went to Kansas. I went to Nebraska. 2007, they go 12-1 and win the Orange Bowl, go 5-7 and don't make a bowl game. So who made the right choice there, right? And but you know, that's just one of those things that Nebraska brought so much more to me than football. So, you know, there's a lot of things that were going on outside of the 5-7 season that really got me excited about being here in Nebraska. And then Bo Pelini came in, ended up winning a starting job at linebacker in 2008. 2009, headed into the season as a starting linebacker, and midway through the season, was told I could never play football again. Had concussion issues, had to step away from the sport, and that's another podcast for another time. But concussions, the epidemic and everything, it was fresh in 2009, and I really said, you know, there's more for me than football. So I stepped away from the game, and less than a year after being done with football at Nebraska, I started a social media agency Herdat, H-U-R-R-D-A-T, Herdat.com. We connected businesses and brands in the Midwest with their customers through social media. So a lot of social media content management, community management, advertising.
Was anyone else doing that at the time, or did you see a gap in the space there?
Oh, we definitely saw a gap in the Midwest. You know, I think there were some people on the early side of things on the coast, but in the Midwest, there was not a social or digital agency in Nebraska. So, yeah, we saw an opportunity there and went with it. And obviously, the market kind of grew, and we went from 2 employees to up to 25 employees, and we sold Herdat last summer in 2014. So it was a quick rise from 2010 to 2014. We went from, you know, just 2 co-founders to 25 employees and 200 plus clients around the world, and it was a great experience.
Incredible. I mean, before you skip ahead, I mean, tell me a little about any tips for folks that could even begin to seek to emulate you and be able to start a successful business right like that right out of school.
Oh man, I was still in school. It's funny. I was getting my MBA at Nebraska. I got my marketing degree. Then my co-founder, Audie Kanalik, was still on the football team. So we would have meetings at practice. He was a kicker. I would go back to practice, and, you know, kickers don't do much. So, but, you know, one of the things, Neil, was it's all about solving problems. I think that and trying to, you know, find a good thing that the time is right in the market and ripe for innovation. And that's what we saw with social media in the Midwest. But end of the day, it's anyone that's got an entrepreneurial drive, find a problem that you're passionate about and solve it. And I think that's what we did. Is, you know, we saw social media as a great way to market, and it was going to continue to grow. Just didn't know how to use it, didn't have time to do it themselves, or didn't have the money to hire full time staff, so they would outsource it to our agency, and then that just you know, we discovered more and more people with that challenge and solved their problem. So.
Very cool. And at the time, the catch-all term social media, was it primarily a Twitter and Facebook play, or Instagram was coming up, Pinterest? I mean, obviously before Snapchat.
Yeah, we were. People would laugh because we'd tell them our job was to tweet, blog, and Facebook all day, but that's literally what we were doing. And, you know, now it's how a lot of people make a living. And it makes so much sense because of the type of engagement, but it was a novel concept. But yeah, we were writing Facebook content, then Facebook allowed images, so we started to do images. We did Twitter, and we would do blog content, and we would write thousands of messages of copy for our clients every day. And then when someone would comment on a picture or image, like, we would respond on behalf of the brand. And in the beginning, it was like, how are we going to let someone else control this? But now it's part of the accepted norm, I guess, in terms of having a professional approach to managing social media.
Totally. And was there a certain inflection point where the epiphany came to you, the light bulb came up, I guess, where you started to be able to tie together the success of content, the successful reach, to really helping to further business goals?
Yeah, definitely. I think the catalyst for starting our social media agency was I took an internship right after I was done with football doing social media for a business-to-business company in Lincoln, and I had really kind of convinced them that they should just let me test things and try things, and in the first 6 months, you know, I would switch up how often we shared content to what platforms we shared which content to, and really found a knack for LinkedIn groups and becoming an active voice within LinkedIn groups. And in 6 months, we generated over $250,000 in new business for that, directly through social media leads, and the majority of that coming through LinkedIn. So I definitely paid for my intern salary, that's for sure.
So I guess, obviously, you were able to connect the dots pretty early on there. And really, it sounds like you were developing a sort of thought leadership yourself early on behalf of the brands. And maybe did that sort of start to open up the door, open up your eyes for what endorsement could really be in this new age of social media?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Neil. I mean, I think anyone that's worked in sports or has been an athlete, it's hard to get away from it. So we're 6 months into Herdat back in 2011, and we're thinking, you know, our athlete friends, pro athletes, you know, they've got fans that they need to connect with, same way that our business clients need to connect with their customers. So we started to work with athletes and help them maintain their social media presence, make sure they're saying the right things at the right time, and build up their own audience. And kind of sitting around the conference table one night, we're saying, you know, these athletes, their fans are customers of our brand clients, or potential customers of our brand clients. And to get a brand from, you know, zero followers online to 10,000 can take years if it's not a big name, right?
Let alone trying to get real followers. I mean, especially in those days, you can buy them.
Yeah, exactly. And so now we're thinking, man, our athlete clients have hundreds of thousands of followers. Like, if we wanted this brand to get in front of 10,000 people, we could either take a year and just build up this audience, or we could borrow the influence of these athlete clients we had. So we said, man, let's try it. So we started to pay our athlete clients to tweet about our brand clients, and it worked. I mean, we saw a 6x lift in engagement for our brand, 6x return on investment for our brands. And it was just an instant access to the influence of these athletes, and it turned into real business results. So, man, I was like, this is powerful. And so it was a very effective way to market. But the biggest problem that we had to solve was how long it took to have one athlete send one tweet for one brand. I mean, it was chaos. It would take us 6 weeks to 6 months to have one athlete send one tweet. And these are guys that we already worked with, you know? And it's just, you know, you don't realize these athletes in the current state of the endorsement industry, it's still very traditional, you know? And it would, in every deal that was brought to the table that was just for 140 characters, the agencies and agents would treat it like it was a 12-month image rights, all, you know, exclusive traditional endorsement deal.
Do you think, like, were the agents ahead of the game knowing the value of their social media reach of their athletes, or were they just kind of being skeptical, and or not being skeptical, but being, I don't want to say greedy, but just trying to get every dollar they could out of any athlete activity?
No, I mean, yeah, I think that they were not necessarily aware of the power of social media, but everyone was still on the hunt for that white whale, that $100,000 six-figure endorsement deal that is fleeting in the endorsement world today because of the power and strength of digital. So, but that's what everything was trying to be turned into. And also, even when it was whittled down to it was just one tweet, it was still, the lawyer had to look at the agreement, revise it, edit it, change it. We had to have it sent, shipped, signed, you know, lost in the fax machine, whatever. We had to have athletes, you know, miss or lose information they're supposed to share, or miss deadlines, not get paid, or send out the wrong content. I mean, all these different challenges. I mean, it's like, there's got to be a simple way to have an athlete share content on social media. And the industry didn't have a solution at that time. And in our eyes, there had been people that had tried, but it just wasn't, maybe they were before their time. But I think that with the growth of social media, we really saw something in front of us.
Was there a demand on behalf of the brands to work with athletes in that capacity, or are you helping to sort of connect the dots for them and bringing this latent value in front of their faces?
You know, I think that some brands had started to think of influencer marketing, and, you know, there's some evidence of that with companies like IZEA or Adly and what they had done and connecting brands with influencers for these types of social media campaigns. But, you know, for a lot of them, it was, you know, brands that want to reach and engage sports fans are spending a lot of dollars on traditional sponsorships, or they're trying to work through their traditional properties and their newfound digital presence to reach sports fans. And then they, you know, were surprised at the power and influence of a professional athlete online. So we had to kind of show the brands the power of what an athlete can bring to their marketing initiative, and the influence and reach that they could also bring to the metrics behind it.
Ah, gotcha. And I guess, was there a certain point where you had to almost differentiate between, this is a campaign that we're going to play off as an influencer campaign versus a more endorsement? I mean, especially in terms of how that 140 characters is going to look. Is it going to look like a sponsored campaign, or is it going to look more, I guess, organic, for lack of a better term, that the athlete is actually using this product or is a fan of this product rather than a pitch man for it?
Yeah, well, you know, at the time, the content of the message, you know, whether it's an endorsement or rather, an ongoing relationship that the brand would establish with the athlete's audience by consistently leveraging their influence. I mean, that content, that can be left to the creator, left to the agency, left to whoever that is. Like, the real problem, I guess, that we wanted to focus on wasn't, how to structure that message or what resonates. It was just getting the message out. Like, I don't care what you want the athlete to say, the process that you have to go through to do it, if you're not using a tool like Open Doors now, I mean, it was text messages, emails, missed phone calls, and dozens of back and forth of conversations for 140 characters. So no matter what the content was, Neil, and is, Open Doors is about getting it done fast. So mm-hmm. What do you want the athlete to say? When do you want them to say it? And how much do you want to pay them? And that deal is going to be in front of the decision maker within minutes. So that's, when we set out to solve this problem, we said it's got to be faster, because in the day of social, whatever the content is, the right content is powerful no matter what your social media strategy is, right? The right medium is important no matter what your strategy is, but the right time is probably one of the most important things in social media. And we're looking at an industry where the most influential people in the world, you can't access for 6 weeks. And mm-hmm. that was a problem. So we, with Open Doors, we set out to speed it up. And after tinkering, we got it down to 6 minutes. If you want to, you got an athlete that you want to share a piece of content, you can have it approved by his agent and the athlete out the door in as little as 6 minutes. And that's really the door we're trying to open.
That's incredible. That's quite a feather in your guys' cap there.
Yeah, and so you find some other things along the way. You know, a lot of our pub or PR has been about, how to value athletes, and that's another part of the conundrum is how what is this worth, right? And trying to really understand the value of an athlete online.
Well,
and
let me ask you, Blake, when you guys were going in to try to answer that question, whether you're working with a huge athlete and a huge corporation or a small company and a smaller athlete, how was endorsement and influencer campaigns, valued before you guys came along or even beyond the digital world?
Yeah, well, I mean, everything is very subjective in terms of how athletes are compensated for traditional endorsements, right? I mean, some guys won't step on a stage unless it's $10,000 an hour. And other guys that have tremendously more credentials and success in their career will do it for $1,000, right? I mean, it's just that's how appearances are. But what's interesting is that the athlete in any traditional sense has no control over the size of the audience that they're being presented to, right? They're just controlling the value of their own self in front of that audience. But with social media, the athlete is both the asset and the media. He is all wrapped in one. So that gives us a chance to think of what do you value an audience at as a marketer, and what is an impression worth, and then putting a premium on that because of the power of an athlete's presence and voice and that endorsement. So beforehand, it was very subjective, but when we started to value these things out, we did have the fortune of having hundreds of clients with Herdat that we could compare what they were paying for online exposure. So the CPM of a Facebook campaign, of a Twitter campaign, of a Facebook contest or program or anything on YouTube. And so we knew what brands were willing to pay to reach 1,000 audience members. And then we used that formula to start to extrapolate what the value of a professional athlete's voice is online compared to every other form of digital marketing.
Is there any sort of intangible that you guys try to bake into that formula? I mean, I guess to use an example, an athlete could obviously post on Facebook or Twitter, Instagram, "Hey, I love this sports drink after I work out. It's awesome." Whereas the athlete that actually maybe has a video of his workout and then him just organically drinking that sports drink afterwards and saying that was refreshing. You know, I guess the idea of the way you present that content, the way you present that endorsement is tougher to gauge when you guys are trying to measure that influence KPI or ROI before the fact.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's a premium for that type of organic content, like lifestyle type marketing, where it just seems like a natural part of their day. Mm-hmm. And so there's a premium you can put on that type of content. But in general, we're looking at the value of the audience and the engagement of the audience. So mm-hmm. it's really, at certain times, it's athlete agnostic, because to reach 100,000 New York Giants fans, you can do that through 10 different players. And the one that has the highest engaged audience of the 100,000 should be the most valuable to a marketer. Now, the other side is, does it match with the brand's goals? Does it match with the campaign timing? Does the content add up? Like, all those things are left to the marketer to decide. But for us, we can at least put the value on the engagement level of that audience and leverage that to assess a value.
Okay. Well, yeah. Let me ask you this, I guess. One thing that, if anyone knows me, they know that one of my pet peeves is just the using the word engagement as a catch-all without giving some context around it. So when you talk about an engaged audience, engagement, how do you sort of account for the different types of engagement? I mean, a double tap on Instagram is not necessarily equal to a share on Facebook or a favorite on Twitter. I mean, is that something that is tough for you guys, or is it really just finding an audience that is active with the post, no matter what kind of activity is taking place?
Yeah, definitely. So one thing we'll look at in the way we define engagement in a real literal sense is, you know, on Twitter, a favorite, a retweet, a click on a link, a mention, like those are like the categories that we use. But how we determine like the value of an engagement is we track 10,000 athletes worldwide, the top athletes across all sports, and it's all relative, right? So if an athlete has a higher engaged audience, that means that across the board, you know, his per retweet, per message, per post, that sort of thing, is higher or lower than the average, and that's the way that we can assess, like, yeah, across the value. And
I love it. It's almost like Moneyball for social media, where you have that that sort of exploit for that, you know, that league average ERA and your ERA plus and such.
Yeah, it is, man. It is, and I think that's it gets really deep in the weeds where we got millions and millions, if not billions, of data points on the stuff to assess the value. And so, you know, Neil, it's really fun. This is a great thing to do, and I think the market's really, the timing is right, and the market's proving that. The challenge with any company is you know, finding those customers that understand the value proposition and learning. And one thing that we've learned is that, you know, you can put a value on a player. You can all, you know, you can say this is what it's worth, but you can't, you know, putting a value on a human is very interesting, because they're always going to say, I'm worth what I'll accept, or an agent will do that for them. So one thing we try to incorporate in our algorithm is, you know, that this athlete is worth $1,000, but he won't do anything for, you know, for less than $2,000. So now every time we do a deal that is above or below what we estimated, it impacts the way we value every athlete in the marketplace. So it just gets closer and closer to what the market's willing to accept with every deal that we do.
That's incredible. That's really amazing depth that you guys go into, really to really bring even more information to the table.
Yeah, it's fun.
Tell me, Blake, then, if you can, real quickly, what is the process like if I'm brand X and I want to do a campaign with an athlete? What's the step-by-step process like for someone to use Open Doors?
Well, Open Doors is built to be a self-serve model. We have also a great services team that can give a white glove approach and really help walk a marketer through their first campaign. But if you sign up as a marketer on opendoors.com, you're going to be greeted with a marketplace that feels very similar to Amazon, right? But instead of shopping for new shoes for the girlfriend, you're looking for a professional athlete that's going to match your campaign. And so you can search, you know, you want to reach an athlete in the Seattle market. You take a quick search and you're going to pull up the whole list of athletes that influence consumers in Seattle, you can sort it and say, show me athletes that are available for $1,000 or less, or $500 or $5,000 or less, whatever your range is. Sort it by the amount of reach or amount of engagement or the lowest CPM, and turn out that, you know, Doug Baldwin is going to be your best choice in the Seattle market, Seattle Seahawks. And then you can click and learn more and see where his audience is located, what their interests are, their male or female, and any past deals that he's done, and really get a sense of, is this going to be the right person for my campaign? You know, one thing that our marketers love is we show you how many of their followers are real versus fake and active versus inactive. And so, yeah, that's a good way to assess the value as well. So say Doug's the right person. You add them to your cart like you're shopping on Amazon, and you go and check out and say, okay, you got one tweet from Doug Baldwin. What do you want him to say? What time do you want it to go out? Right? And then you hit go, you know, hit next, and then you check out. And that message is delivered directly to Doug Baldwin's agent that says, you know, Neil's XYZ company wants Doug Baldwin to say this for $1,000. And his agent says yes. And then wherever Doug is in the world, he gets an alert to his phone that says your agent's approved a deal from Neil's XYZ company for $1,000. He says yes. And then the message goes out at the date and time you scheduled. And the marketer's alerted the entire time, and they once the deal's out, it's they log in, and we start to show them in real time how many people the message has reached and what the engagement metrics are, and really the CPM, CPE, and the different things that marketers come to expect with digital campaigns.
Man, what a world we live in. That's incredible. Hey, what's been the response from agents and also the super athletes, I guess? Like, are agents more than happy to have their athletes listed in Open Doors, or is somebody like if you're LeBron James, are you more looking for a company that's going to sign you to a long term, you know, 7, 8, 9-figure, 10-figure contract?
Yeah, the reception has been mixed across the board. I mean, I think that it's overwhelmingly positive once the message is really understood of what we're providing. You know, some agents may see us as a competitor, but we're actually an asset. We're a tool in the tool belt. Like, we can help them bring more deals to their clients and make them look good and strengthen that relationship. So, you know, we've got 500 agents that use our software every day to manage opportunities for their clients. We got, you know, 3,500 athletes that we have access to the platform. So, like, those numbers show that there's adoption in the market. And then the big thing to get over is that, you know, it's free for agents to use. It's free for their athletes to be on the platform. And the worst that can happen is that you get an offer for a deal that you say no to. But the best that can happen is that you can, you know, get upwards of $20,000 for one tweet for a client, and all the agent has to do is say yes. So it's a benefit. Now, talking about the bigger athletes, you know, those guys are looking for bigger deals. And, you know, the marketplace side of Open Doors and bringing those deals to the market, you know, we've brought some 6-figure deals to certain athletes that they passed on. That's the LeBron James story that was spread among a lot of different media outlets. And but that's because there are. I mean, certain athletes have thresholds, and LeBron is someone that deserves and has the ability to say, you know, it's not going to work for less than 7 figures or even 10 figures, and only on long term deals. So
that's,
but
of course, the 0.1%, though, I would imagine.
Yeah, right. That's the other. Yeah, but there's 99% of the market that would love to have an extra buck. And really, social media has created a level playing field in terms of athletes and their influence and their marketability. So we're here as a marketplace to serve athletes of all sizes.
Definitely. And have you guys seen some of those Open Doors campaigns, or I guess partnerships is a better word, turn into more of a long-term partnership, where someone, a campaign might be a one-off at first, but then they say, hey, we really like this athlete, and let's try to get him into a long-term deal?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that we've seen at different levels, I guess. So we can see brands come in and maybe do a campaign with 10 athletes, and then they can see that one of them is really resonating with the audience, and they'll kind of take them and carry them through and come back and do repeat campaigns with that athlete. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've seen that with Smarty Pants, which is an interesting vitamin supplement company, you know, and doing that with Natalie Gulbis and the LPGA, and then starting to test it, then coming back to the same athlete. So I think there's different examples of that, but the main solution that we're providing to marketers is the social media side of it. So even if they're doing those bigger deals, it's only the socials being managed through Open Doors.
Okay. Just a few minutes left. You're having a really awesome conversation with Blake Lawrence, founder and CEO of Open Doors. Tell me a little bit about how you guys can use your formulas and your systems really across the board. I mean, yes, it's about connecting athletes and brands, but really social media in general, there's such a huge movement now for influencer campaigns. And I mean, I know just you and I talking offline, one thing I really enjoyed hearing about was how Fake Bopolini is a client. And that's so cool to think that, you know, he is able to use his reach and his engaged audience to monetize his presence as well. I mean, is there a sky's limit type philosophy, or do you guys really want to stay in that sports space because that's where your history is?
Yeah, you know, we love sports. We're sports nuts. If you see our office, it's just covered with jerseys and ESPN's on 24/7. So it's passion. And I said entrepreneurship is about solving problems around something you're passionate about. So we love sports for that reason. But we know that the open source model can work in other verticals. So right now we're focused on, you know, influencers that influence sports fans, because that's the market we're going after. But I see us in 18 months, 24 months working in other verticals, working with celebrities and musicians. But I think we've got a good start in this market, and I'm excited to continue to see it grow.
Oh, I would say so. And it's really been cool in the recent past, I guess the last really couple of years here, where you guys get, you know, mentioned in some of the high level business magazines, or Darren Revelle is writing stories about you guys. And how does that help on your guys' end? Does it bring more businesses to you? Does it bring more agents to you? Does it really increase the traffic to your site? And how do you guys try to capitalize off those kinds of fun stories about how much a LeBron James tweet is worth, for example?
You know, that is it's a very unique PR move, and it's something that just kind of happened organically. You know, that we put a value on an athlete's tweet, and it's novel. You know, it's something that is intriguing to an audience, so it does carry pretty wide and far. So, you know, last month Darren Revelle shared some content about LeBron James's tweets are valued around $140,000 for one tweet, and exposure went so wild. I mean, we had, you know, the twice what a monthly visit to our website would be in 24 hours, right? And
wow.
And we tripled the amount of business that was in our sales funnel and pipeline. So it definitely opens up the door, because it makes people curious. It's like, you know, why is it worth so much? You know, what is so valuable about this? And then once they get to peek under the hood, they realize that using a professional athlete, you have the bona fide star in front of your brand, but also you have the power of their audience, like, falling in love with your brand. And that's what you see once you understand the value of it. And I think that's a story that we'll continue to share, is why are these athletes worth this, and why is this a very opportunistic way to reach and engage a sports audience? And we can make it happen faster than anybody.
That's really what it's all about, is that's the model there, is making it easier than it's ever been. And really, too, that's just, I mean, that's content. You guys are so adept with the content marketing. I mean, be able to put out those kinds of articles and stories about, you know, selecting the right endorsers and how much an athlete's tweet is worth. And that's really how you drive some qualified leads and future customers for you guys, in addition to also entertaining some sports fans as well. I mean, like myself. And it's really cool to see that help you guys have success as well.
No, I appreciate that. Neil, you complimented our content marketing in the past, and I think that we have this unique background where we did content marketing for, you know, hundreds of brands across the world, and so it's really helped us have confidence in the way that we market our own brand. And it's once we sold our agency, it was like, we now have one client, and it's ourselves, so how can we use the best practices we apply for our own clients on Open Doors? And it's worked, and I think that's one thing I would advise anyone that's working in sports, is, you know, to educate before you sell, because I think people value learning way more than they value being sold to. And I think that it helps us establish trust in the market and confidence with our customers when we can feel and provide value as a thought leader on certain topics.
Let's touch on that real briefly. I just a couple more minutes left before this episode's shareable stat. When you guys first started Herdat and even Open Doors as well, was there less of a demand for ROI and for metrics? Was it more you guys having to educate, hey, we need to track how these campaigns are going, this is our KPIs, and has it evolved since then? Or are you guys still finding you have to educate folks on how to properly track ROI and value campaigns?
Yeah, you know what's interesting is we were talking offline about Kelly Mosier and what he's doing with Nebraska Athletics, and we talked about this yesterday, and he said something that really resonated with me. You know, he said, you know, right now he feels like we're at social media 3.0, right? Social media 1.0, which is when we started Herdat, was, are you on it? Are you on social media, mm-hmm. right? And then social media 2.0 was, are you measuring it? I mean, are you just growing your audience? Are you finding ways to measure it? And now 3 is about, how are you measuring the return? And are you turning from a content producer but to a content enabler, right? In terms of actually you're on social, you have a community, and you're no longer just the voice, you're actually enabling communication among your audience. And I think that's where we're at, and in the beginning there was it was just, are you there or not? And Herdat helped people get there. And I remember before Facebook had analytics, before Twitter had analytics, we would drop in all kinds of manual primary research and Excel sheets and try and show clients like impressions and reach and all this. And then they turned it on the networks and it was great. But now it's moving beyond that. It's how do you make that data actionable? And I think that's core to Open Doors is understanding data and the power of it. And then also turn that into tangible business results.
Oh, I love it. It's so well put. I mean, folks, listeners can't see right now, but I am glowing and smiling because you really articulated it so well, and I can't wait to see, you know, how data and measuring campaigns continues to evolve, and who knows where we'll be a year from now, let alone 2 or 3 or 4 years from now. That's incredible.
Appreciate it, man.
Well, we'll be right back to episode's shareable stat, and we're also going to have a little more fun with Blake still. With our quick hitting questions, but first we have the episode shareable stat coming right up. Really enjoyed speaking with Blake all about Open Doors and really the world of social media sponsorships for athletes and influencers in general. Really thoughtful stuff, and I look forward to getting to know more about Blake in our Blab with Blake section. Some fun quick hitting questions coming right up. But first, this episode's shareable stat. And this episode's shareable stat, very relevant to tonight's conversation as it comes straight from Open Doors using their proprietary formulas. And that is that 7 of the top 10 most valuable Twitter users in the world among pro athletes are soccer players. 7 of the top 10 pro athletes in the world on Twitter in terms of value are soccer players. And what does that mean? Well, first off, it should definitely remind you that Twitter is very much an international medium, as is social media in general. There are sports fans all around the world, and if you look at an athlete like a Messi or a Cristiano Ronaldo, there's a reason that those guys have huge engaged audiences in every country in the world, just about, in several languages, and you're seeing them connect on Facebook, on Twitter, on Sina Weibo, on VK in Russia, and on Facebook, even with fans in Brazil and South America and all over the world. And really, as an American sports business marketer, what you can take away from that is, first off, see what they're doing. See how they are engaging their audience elsewhere. Whether you work in college sports or in pro sports, there are likely a lot of fans that you have engaged in your social media channels that aren't able to buy tickets to games, aren't able to come to team appearances and events in the community. And how can you engage those audiences and ultimately monetize them? There's a lot of really interesting things that the international football clubs are doing to engage audiences all the way from the UK to China and also make money off them and help spread the brand, truly spread it globally. And of course, you see some soccer teams start to travel around the world playing exhibition games to bring their brand straight in front of the people all around the world. So really a lot you can learn from these international soccer players and how sponsors are using them to reach audiences like never before. So that's this episode's shareable stat. Think about it, ponder it, learn from it, and continue studying it. And that is that 7 of the top 10 pro athletes in terms of value on Twitter are soccer players. All right, that's this episode's shareable stat. Coming right back at you. We're going to have a little fun in our Blab with Blake section. All right, that's this episode's shareable stat, and it comes straight from Blake's company himself, Open Doors, and they have told us that 7 of the top 10 most valuable Twitter users among the sports world, the pro athlete world, are soccer players. And maybe that's shocking to some Americans, but really folks who are in tune with the worldwide nature of sports aren't too surprised. But I mean, how do you take that? What do you take away from that, Blake?
You know, I think that as American sports fans, we're thinking American football, basketball, that's got to be it. But even in the top athletes, you're going to see NBA and soccer players way above any NFL player. And that's because those are global sports. And soccer, obviously, is a global sport. And I think that we think Facebook and Twitter are only in the U.S., but, you know, you don't get a billion users just in the U.S. These fans are everywhere. And soccer continues to lead. And, you know, what's interesting about the value of these athletes is they're multilingual. And it actually can really double their influence because they can serve more types of consumers than just an English-based U.S. American athlete. So it's a different way to value, but definitely an influential audience all the same.
Is there a future for Open Doors to try to eventually get into, you know, valuing Sign a Weibo campaigns and WeChat and things like that?
You know, there's step by step, but there's definitely international influence that marketers are trying to capitalize, and that's definitely part of that 3.0 social media step. But we're starting here and trying to figure out the U.S. market and educate, and then we can go global.
Hey, it just means the sky's the limit for Open Doors. I love it. All right, Blake, you survived your interview, sir. Are you now ready for the Blab with Blake section?
I'm ready, man. Shoot away.
All right, let's do it. We got Blake Lawrence on the line, founder and CEO of Open Doors. Now it's time to get to know him as we blab with Blake. Number one for you, this is a tough question. Is there such thing as negative endorsement value? I mean, like, what if LeBron were to tweet that he was not a fan of a brand, that he hated Adidas, for example?
You know, any publicity is good publicity. It would get a conversation started about that brand, that negative brand. We've actually been asked, Neil, if a brand could pay an athlete to talk poorly about a competitor.
Wow.
And yes. So there's definitely some smart marketers out there trying to understand the negative side of endorsements. But end of the day, an athlete speaking negatively about anything in a public forum draws publicity. And that publicity, no matter how you spin it, can sometimes lead to more business than really a decrease in business.
Just wait till Facebook introduces that dislike button, and then we'll have a whole other conversation. But like you said, at the end of the day, it's an engaged audience that gets the word out there. That's really fascinating. All right, Blake, number two for you. I'm looking forward to this one. The best brand endorser partnership that you've seen Open Doors put together, and why? The one that made you go, wow, that's just so perfect.
I feel that it's just, there's certain things that I'm trying to think through the different fits. You know, I think this one isn't as exciting, but it's real. You know, I think last year, Jordy Nelson, Veterans Day, USAA, you know, USAA wanted to support veterans and amplify their sponsorship in the NFL by working with players that played in cities near bases where USA had a strong presence and relationship with veterans, and we worked with Jordy Nelson to share some content of, you know, the American flag waving over the field, you know, on Veterans Day and that celebration. So I think that's a real connection with the brand that, you know, we're excited to introduce the opportunity and also to see it play out so well on social media.
I love that. It must have been pretty legit too, then, if you're willing to call out a former is he a K-State wide receiver, I think was his college case?
Yeah, he's a Kansas kid. I grew up in Kansas, so I Jordy's still good on my side.
Best wishes to him too as he recovers from injury. Number three for you, Blake. And this can be an open endorsed client or not. The best pro athlete endorser in general, and why you think that is. You know, who's getting you the most bang for your buck?
The most bang for your buck. You know, it's going to depend on your audience. You know, it's going to depend on who you're reaching. And one guy that we love working with and we love seeing his rise and is Rob Gronkowski, because he transcends different audiences. Women are attracted to him. Young kids want to be him. Teenagers want to be a rebel just like him, and adults just admire that he's having fun. I mean, it's rare to find a brand that doesn't want to work with him. And obviously he's turned a lot of his off the field personality into business. And it also helps that on the field, he's very, very, very talented.
Oh, and you know, too, I had a conversation on a previous podcast. We had Nita Srikanth on from ESPN NFL, and she mentioned that Gronkowski is just a great guy to work with, and he really is someone who, as much flack as he gets for being the party boy and maybe the fun loving guy, he really does carry himself pretty well and is pretty sharp too off the field. So definitely an answer I agree with there.
Yep, and one thing I'll give a shout out to is his brother Dan Gronkowski. I mean, Rob, his brother, handles so much of his business, and you know, he's a talent. Rob is a talent that doesn't come around very often, and he could be with the biggest agency in the world, but he's kept it all in the family. And that can go one or two ways with athletes. And that is a family that gets it, that is approachable. It will listen to opportunities. And when you want to get something in front of Rob, you know it got to him, and you don't have that feeling with other groups sometimes.
I love that. There's definitely a little bit of business going on in the Gronk family party bus too. number
true.
Four for you, Blake. This could be fun. The coolest athlete that you've met or worked with. Maybe it's a Husker, maybe a non-Husker, maybe both.
Oh man, coolest athlete that I've met or worked with. You know, I would say, at the ESPYs a couple years ago, I went out there with Prince Amukamara. He's one of my best friends, played football together at Nebraska. And just being in the same room as Aaron Rodgers, and seeing this, he had a booth at the ESPY party and was very approachable, and got to have a little conversation with him. I think that's a guy that he also understands that it's okay to have fun. But also gets the job done on the field. So Aaron Rodgers is up there, that's for sure.
Very cool. Definitely only a handful of athletes out there that really, really truly get it and really know and understand the value of being genuine and being approachable. And I think you pointed out well that A-Rodge is one of those guys. All right, how about this one, Blake? We went into this a little bit earlier, and I know we could probably go hours on this, but especially given your background playing football and having your career end a little earlier than you would have liked, what were your thoughts on Chris Borland stepping away recently from the NFL and with his concerns about what it would do to his health moving forward?
You know, Chris Borland was a talent, you know, and he proved that in 1 year in the NFL that he was special. And just, you know, my story on a different level, on a local level, you know, I was a real surprise when I stepped away from, you know, being a starting linebacker in Nebraska, and then Chris doing on that level. I mean, I remember that impact that it had in this community. It was like, wow, we should all rethink what concussions are. Mm-hmm. And then the epidemic and just so much education going on, then someone like Chris Boland, who everyone would agree he was on his way to doing something great, to step away, it really makes you rethink, like, this is a game, and life isn't a game, the brain isn't. So I respect Chris Boland, because he's going to, as much as he wants to step into that role, he could become the face of education awareness.
Wow.
And it means a lot.
Do you think there's a bunch of other D1 athletes and even NFL players out there now that are starting to think about, you know, the type of things that Chris Borland was thinking about a year ago?
Yeah, I think it takes one person to do it, and then it gives an example that it's okay to step away. You know, at Nebraska, Neil. I was the first player in the 4 years that I was there to leave due to concussions. Then in the year after I did that, there was four players that decided to step away. So once someone shows athletes that it is okay to protect your long-term health and step away from a game, I think it opens the doors for us to be more comfortable with it. And so I think that you can and will expect to see more of these players protect their long-term health by stepping away from the game. And hopefully that's going to serve as a catalyst to enforce more player protection and protect against brain injuries.
Well, thank you for your comments on that. It's really, really well thought and well put. And like I said, we could go hours on that topic for sure. Number six for you, Blake. You've already you've been successful as an entrepreneur and business founder. I mean, it's really incredible to see the success and growth aspects of Open Doors. So tell our listeners the biggest lesson you've learned as an entrepreneur and business founder.
It's a roller coaster, it's never as bad as you think it is. It's never as good as you think it is. It's in between. And people are crazy and people are crazily rewarding, I guess. When you want to build a company, you got to have great people around you. And, you never quite know. You can try and predict all these different things that come out of it, but you never quite know if they're going to react in the face of adversity. And so you got to be prepared for perpetual change and have people that want to be on the roller coaster with you. And end of the day, man, you just got to compete. There's so many similarities between being in a locker room and being in a boardroom. It's just how you put on your game face and go after it every day.
I love that. Every day is like another snap in football. You can win or lose, and just I guess enjoy the ride, enjoy the series, enjoy the game along the way. That's awesome.
That's right.
Number seven for you, Blake. Coming to the end here with Blake Lawrence, CEO and founder of Open Doors. Really great conversation. The most unusual pro athlete endorsement you can recall? One that was just like, that's interesting.
The strangest endorsement. We had this company. Neil Heine Healer, like Heine, like for babies, right, to avoid baby rash. And they had seen cyclists and football players use it to avoid any, bike rash, riding a bicycle too long or jock rash, whatever. And so we did a deal with Heine Healer and Dwayne Harris of now the formerly the Dallas Cowboys. So professional football player talking about how Heine Healer protects his bum from a rash. But it worked, man. People were buying the product from the website because sometimes those abstract alignments are actually the most talked about. So we enjoy those
awesome
little things.
There is no relationship that Open Doors cannot help facilitate. That is fantastic.
Yes.
All right, now number eight for you. Looking forward to this one. Obviously, every college town has its great food. You've been down in Lincoln, Nebraska for a little while. What is the best food to get in Lincoln?
Lincoln, Nebraska, if you're in the Haymarket area, you got to go to Leadbelly and get the Raspberry Beret Burger. This has got peanut butter, raspberry jalapeno jelly, bacon. It's what you need. And then if you're downtown on O Street, you go to the Watering Hole and get the medium grilled wings with some blue cheese. And it takes a little longer for them to cook, but it's worth it.
Jeez, I guess I will have to make a visit and get those things and then probably jog from Lincoln back to L.A. to try to work it off.
Yeah, we don't do that. Yep, I like it.
Last one for you, Blake. This might be a tough one. What's going to happen first? Will Nebraska win a Big Ten title in men's basketball with Coach Miles, or will they win a Big Ten title in football?
I think that there's with Urban Meyer at the helm at Ohio State, the Big Ten West division is going to have its hands full. Nonetheless, the resolve of Nebraska fans we refuse to imagine a season that we don't start the year and end the year undefeated. So I think football, just by sheer brute force, will find a way to win that thing. And no disrespect to the basketball team in Nebraska. Coach Miles is doing great things, but he's got to get past Izzo, and I don't see that happening anytime soon either. So I think Nebraska football, just by a hair, we'll do it in the same year, and so I don't have to pick a side.
I love it. That's that political answer. The black shirts will rise once again soon enough.
Soon enough, brother.
All right, Blake, you survived your Blab with Blake section. Now your chance to take over the podcast and tell us your social media all-star to follow. I know someone on Twitter, who they are and why they're worth following.
Oh, man. One of my favorite people to follow on Twitter is Lana Berry. I'm sure that you follow Lana, at L-A-N-A, and because she gets it. I think that she understands the power of humor in sports and also is quick to call out brands that are doing it right and brands that are doing it wrong and athletes doing it right and athletes doing it wrong. So at L-A-N-A on Twitter, Lana Berry, she's an all-star in my book.
Do you ever play around on your board and put in some individuals like yourself or her, and just to see how much their Twitter audience is worth?
Hey, man, I'm available for $27.39 at opendoors.com. I'll tweet whatever you want, that's for sure.
Oh, man, so if you retweet this podcast, I'm making money. That's awesome.
That's right, man. That's right. Saving a buck or two.
I love it. All right, Blake, and lastly, where can we find you and your valuable social media outlets, as well as Open Doors on social and digital and web?
Well, you can find me at @Blake_Lawrence on Twitter, at @Blake_Lawrence on Instagram. Instagram is more personal, but that's real me, and Twitter is just conversation. A lot of Husker football there, so be ready for it. And then at opendoors.com, OPENDORSE, and twitter.com/opendoors and facebook.com/opendoors. We're all over it, but great content from the Open Doors brand, really focused on educating the power of the athlete influence online. Good for all audiences. It's entertaining for the average consumer, but also informative for the average marketer and above average agent and athlete.
Oh, I would highly recommend everyone follow Open Doors online and on Twitter. I mean, I love all your guys' content, just thought-provoking stuff and really educational as well. It's not just, you know, by no means is it all promotional at all. It's really helping folks learn about, you know, the evolving world of, I guess, social media campaigns and endorsements and business cases in general. But Blake, we could talk about this all day. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast, taking time to school us a little bit about, you know, how you built Open Doors and some of the cool things that you guys are doing in the space. So best of luck moving forward, and thank you so much again for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, Neil. Appreciate you allowing me to share our story, and congrats on all your success and the audience that you've built. And look forward to doing this again and sharing more stories in the future. But getting back to work, man. So
most definitely. Soon. Well, at the very least, give yourself a little bit of time off on every Saturday to cheer on your Huskers, huh?
That's right, man. The black shirts will rise.
Oh, there. That's how we'll end it right there. All right, have a good one, Blake. Thanks again.
Thank you so much again to Blake Lawrence, founder and CEO of Open Doors. Really thoughtful stuff. Really learned a lot from him and could really have a conversation with him about a number of topics. But that will do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thank you so much again for listening. Really do appreciate it. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. Please visit the website for more content at dsmsports.net. And go to give me a follow and tweet to me about the podcast at NJH287. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next time on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.